It's the Constitution is beautiful. The Bill of Rights is beautiful. It's such an intelligent document. It somehow answers like tons of questions and answers some of these moral dilemmas that governments have had since a bunch of cavemen got together and decided to govern themselves.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Buck Starts Here, Buck Wild Edition. Eric Mason and I are currently between eras and still trying to delay that entry into season two, doing our best to avoid talking about Jackson for as long as we possibly can. We made it through the first five articles of the Bill of Rights. Is that the right term? Articles?
Amendments.
Amendments? Bill? Yeah. That's a tough one, huh? Semantics of that one are weird. Yeah, so we got through the first five amendments of the... to the first five of the amendments of the Bill of Rights, we're now trying to get through the last five and a bonus too. I think Eric's been saving for us.
Yeah, I'm very excited about.
We do have another bonus one here.
Oh, we do have a bonus. We have the newest amendment of the Bill of Rights that many of our listeners were probably alive for when it passed.
This is not like the 24th or 25th amendment. You're talking about like an actual Bill of Rights amendment, one of the first
Bill of Rights amendment. Yeah, it's the 27th amendment.
What?
Yeah, no, we're gonna get there. We're gonna get there, Kyle. You don't worry about that. We're gonna row down the river of constitutional restrictions.
Well, and part of what we're doing here too is we're trying to put ourselves in the minds of the people who wrote this. Like, what were they thinking at the time? Why did this amendment come to be something that needed to be codified in a document? I don't know if you want to take us off from number six, or if there's another spot you want to start with.
No, we'll start with number six, and I just know, just to let our dear listeners know, is that it's going to feel like we're moving through the last five, but in reality is that the back half of the amendments, the if you look at six, seven, and eight, are all assumptions people just already thought were protected, just being codified. These already existed in virtually every single state. And they just want to make sure the federal constitution ensured these same rights as the states had, just on a national scale. And then we're going to go to Article 9, which I would argue is one of the most interesting and, I think, direct observations that you can see of the belief of natural philosophy that the founding fathers had through John Locke, the idea that rights originate from people, that the people are given the rights, whether, in the founding fathers' case, they believe that rights come from God and that those rights are then given up for security, but you were born with all your unalienable rights. Article 9 really... Kyle, I said Article 9, damn. the Ninth Amendment really solidifies that. And then the greatest piece of legislation for commerce ever in the history of the world, which is the 10th Amendment, which nobody knows remembers what the 10th Amendment is.
Isn't that just the catch-all? Anything that's not listed in here is basically up to the states?
Yeah. The greatest right of enumerations to states. The greatest economic piece of legislation ever did.
Okay. Well, you're going to have to defend that viewpoint when we get to that one.
Oh, I will vehemently defend that.
You said they're kind of like losing steam as we're getting through it. So it's almost like the first five were like the most contentious of all things.
Oh, yeah.
So how were these getting like proposed even? Like who was submitting these? Why wasn't there like 1,000 items of like sugar should be available for all meals or tea should only be taxed at 5%, no more? Or,
So they were sending it back. What happens is the Constitution went out to all the states to be ratified. And then each state held its own constitution convention to review it. Mm-hmm. And then all the states were sending that information back essentially to James Madison and saying, hey, I have X and Y and Z. Now, a lot of times the people who were part of the constitutional conventions in their own states weren't part of the delegation of Congress. And when I say, like, this is the first 3 years under the U.S. Constitution that we're talking about. This is very early on in congressional history. And then they're all going to James Madison, and James Madison is working with a team to review and see what's associated. Now, remember, the Constitution already existed. The Constitution was already operating. So there was an economic incentive. There was that alignment of incentives for states not to be too difficult, because you can just say, well, you already ratified the Constitution, so if you want to be difficult, well, then we're not going to have the amendment. So that's why a lot of these amendments were just so widely accepted, was because they already existed at the state level. And if they existed in enough states that were going to ratify those amendments, well, it didn't really, there was no way for the other states to fight it.
Well, if it was all basically universal to the states, then why did they feel the need in general then?
Because they wanted that overture of the federalist system to protect it. Now, mm-hmm. Kyle, you brought up a good point. So before the federal style of government we have now, sometimes there's a misnomer when we talk about federal government that federal is a synonym for national. There's mm-hmm. a difference between what a national government and a federal government is. Federal is a form of government. So you have central governments, which is what France is, where it goes national government, state government, local government. Then you have a confederate style of government, where the states are more powerful than the national government, and then locals at the bottom. In the United States,
maybe like the EU.
That would be a good way to describe the EU. That would be really, really good.
Because the EU is pretty weak, central organization. But this,
they need the consent of. I actually think there's an exclusionary clause. I think they need the consent of everybody. That's why, like, people want to keep throwing out Hungary out of the EU. I think that's probably the best way to describe it, right? Like,
right.
The EU is weak unless everybody agrees. So the Articles of Confederation were weak unless all the states agreed. So that's why they got rid of it. And then you have what I, not to add my personal opinions, but what I think a lot of economists would agree, which is the most efficient form of government for large nations, the federal system of government, where the federal government is the supreme law of the land. The Constitution is the supreme law of the land. But everything not specifically weighed in the Constitution explicitly goes to the authorities of the states. And states can make better decisions at the more micro level to optimize efficiency. And economic efficiency is largely driven by institutions. And nothing is more important to an institution than a Constitution, whether it's a federal one or a state one. So do you want to start off with the Sixth Amendment?
Yeah.
So I'm not going to read that entire...
I cheated. I looked ahead. I remember this is the speedy trial one. This is basically the one that guarantees your right to a jury of your peers, right?
That is. Yep, exactly. And I'm going to tell you, as I'm reading through all this old-timey text, I don't know why. I think maybe my brain started to get a little fried from just reading writings from the 17 and 1800s. It was very funny to see in old English writing the word speedy. That feels like a very modern word.
It kind of does feel a little weird, huh?
I saw that word and I was like, that's not a... They didn't write that. Like, no, James Madison didn't use the word speedy. Like, expeditiously, right? Shouldn't that be the word?
Yeah, it feels a little lowbrow for the Constitution.
Yes, it does. But I think one of the interesting... So we all know, it's a right to a speedy trial. It's a right to a trial of your peers. It's a right to... it's a right to be tried where the law was broken.
So there's a couple things I could see where this might have come about from. The one, the right to be tried where it happened. Like, that's, I'm guessing there's probably a bunch of cases where people are being shipped off to England to be able to face crime or face the trials for whatever their supposed crimes were. The speedy trial thing, how often were people probably just sitting around in a prison cell waiting months, years, decades even?
Yeah, that's exactly what it was, this idea of indefinitely holding people.
Right. You got a tricky case and you don't know how to do it, we'll just let it sit there until we figure it out.
Exactly. And, one of the specifically is that a lot of the things going on in Massachusetts, New York, Virginia, these places, a lot of trade is that a lot of times smuggling was they would want to try people in the Admiralty courts without juries. And that was obviously not where the jurisdiction was. I mean, smuggling is not a naval crime.
No, and they're not naval members, even so. Like, you're not subject to the USMJC.
But the Sixth Amendment, it's really cool because it talks about the speedy trial. We all know that part. That's like the one I think most people know about it. Public trial, that's basically a way for the public to audit that the trial is just. And so if it's not, people have the right to protest. People have their First Amendment rights to do as they see fit.
This is the one, too, that has the thing in there about being able to confront your accuser.
Yeah, it is. So it has this concept of the confrontation clause. And what's cool is the confrontation clause comes not from U.S. example. It actually comes from the trial of this gentleman, Sir Walter Raleigh, in England. And it was in 1603. And basically, a lord had written a letter accusing, and he got convicted on this, Sir Walter Raleigh of committing a couple different crimes. And the jury convicted him. And everybody afterwards was like, What? No, you have a right to face your accuser. You have a right, right. for the accuser to be examined.
Just and based it, off of a letter, he was convicted, is it?
Okay. Just based off a letter. And this comes down to something called the compulsory process clause, and it empowers defendants to use the court's power to obtain witnesses, and to use the court's power to ensure they have a fair chance to have defense present. And it stops that from the prosecution having control of all the evidence. It basically creates discovery. A lot of legal scholars that I read here said one of the most important parts of our constitution, of our whole law system, is this the guarantee of assistance of counsel, the idea that you have a right to a defense.
Is that part of here too? Yeah, it is. That's part of you too. Wow.
Yeah.
Man, this, Amendment 6 is doing a lot of work here. Right?
Now, it is important to note that the Sixth Amendment, a lot of the stuff is already codified. Like, you already assumed out of all this. But it was seen as this big and important add-on to the U.S. Constitution that we solidified that this exists no matter where you are in the country, no matter what new states form, no matter what state constitutions change, you're going to have the right to a speedy trial. You're going to have a right to all these very things today we just think are automatic, a right to counsel, a right to speedy trial, a right to a public trial, a right to a jury, a right to a jury made of the people of the locality where the crime was committed. So you can't bring in new juries who are just going to vote for you.
Right. And you also can't just stick you into another jurisdiction where you have a better chance of a favorable ruling.
Yeah. And that's the Sixth Amendment. Now, as a Bostonian, one of the most recent prolific Sixth Amendment issues that popped up was the Safaris case after the Boston bombing, where his attorney argued he would not be able to have a fair trial in Boston.
Right.
Because that's where he committed his crime. And they were like, no, the Sixth Amendment. Show me where it's a violation.
Yes.
Don't commit crimes against people and then expect not to get in trouble. Like, what do you?
When you bomb an entire city, you might you're gonna have to face a little bit of repercussions.
Yeah,
like it's almost like this is protection for them too. Like, they get to judge the guy who.
Yeah. You know? That was very bizarre to me. I'm like, you're arguing the exact thing the Constitution's saying you should do.
I want to throw Madison some love for just how tight this one is written. This one is just, it flows really well. This is just a beautifully written amendment, in my opinion.
He is. The more you study Madison, the more you like Madison. Like, the more you're like, I like this dude.
He reminds me of Pink Floyd. Like, his compositions are simple but elegant and beautiful.
That's the first time James Madison has ever been compared to Pink Floyd.
I know. Probably the last two.
So the Sixth Amendment is really where you see the basis for many of the, I don't want to even say use the word stereotypical, but the kind of the stereotypical way we view the legal system. And what's interesting about the Sixth Amendment is that everybody kind of just assumed that was going to be part of the Constitution anyways. It's more of a summary of expectations from where English law was at the time than it was a total new system.
Okay.
This kind of plays into the single most requested amendment to the Constitution by states, which is the Seventh Amendment.
So really?
That's who would have guessed? Would you think it's the First Amendment or the Second or the Third Amendment? But the most requested, most letters Madison got about wanting to change update the Constitution was the Seventh Amendment, which is your right to a jury in a civil trial.
Why was that?
Part of it was commerce. Civil trials are very, very important for the institute, for the upholding of contract law. And there was a movement in a response after the Constitution was sent to different states, that they were shocked to find that a trial by jury was mentioned in the U.S. Constitution itself, but only for criminal offenses, not for civil offenses.
Oh, is it the one that's like, it mentions a grand jury in it too, or something like that?
Yep. So it mentions this. Well, grand juries are only for criminal cases. So that's Amendment 6. So grand juries are used to stop prosecutions from just constantly bringing charges against somebody. It's the idea of like a, it's funny, most people think a grand jury is the last jury. It's like, no, it's the first jury. The Seventh Amendment, it derives it's or I should say its impetus for existence, it was heavily driven by something called the Sugar Act of 1764, in which custom officers used to accuse smugglers of, and we actually mentioned this a little bit in the Sixth Amendment, but in the Seventh Amendment, what drove it was the sugar tax. And custom officials would accuse smugglers of, smuggling stuff, even if they didn't.
Right.
And they would try them at admiralty court, not on criminal offenses, but on civil offenses. And it's like, what does an admiral have to do with civil offenses?
That they just because he's smuggling, it's in the water, admiral must have domain of that. We'll just give him the... That's probably why, right? Who has control of the seas?
What a commandant is usually associated with the Navy, right?
Yeah.
I think that's why, because commandants usually oversaw, trade hubs.
Mm, okay.
But my favorite one, the primary driver of this was John Hancock, our boy.
Oh, the smuggler himself.
Yeah, the smuggler himself. He wrote many letters to the Constitution Convention supporting it.
Is this basically what established a civil... sector of the judicial system?
I would say it codified it. It gave it power. Yeah, established it. Because without power, it's not established. No, you're right, Kyle. This is what established it. Mm-hmm. Because before, again, a lot of people are shocked this wasn't included in the Constitution originally. This idea that you have a right to a jury in a civil trial. But this is what made it this process where it's not just magistrates sitting behind a desk decide all these cases, and instead you have juries, you have the people deciding the cases. Juries also just good to test public consensus on an issue.
Right.
And especially in a civil case where there's no criminal proceedings, it's an especially good way to kind of judge how people wish to have their commerce governed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was the most requested change. I think that's a great trivia question. What was the most requested change in the Constitution? Who would ever guessed trial by jury for civil cases? Then we get to the briefest amendment.
Yeah, and this one is like, no nuts shall be served at Thanksgiving dinner. It's like one guy got really pissed off at having to pay a massive bail.
That's exactly what it was.
Is it really?
It's the Eighth Amendment, okay. Which is excessive bail. It says excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Mm-hmm. That's it. That's the entire amendment. The Eighth Amendment has been adjudicated in the Supreme Court numerous times. This is probably right now, there's probably an Eighth Amendment case at the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
It's been discussed everything from the use of bail, cash bail versus non-cash bail.
Something in Illinois go through about eliminating bail. There was, I think, some cases with the death penalty, considering whether that was cruel or unusual, right? Yep.
But the Eighth Amendment has really evolved over time. And, we can totally get into the discussion on what that's turned into with its use for, what food are you required to feed prisoners to. The cruel and unusual punishment example you just gave, Kyle. What I think it's really cool is that word for word, excessive fines, excessive bail, and cruel and unusual punishment are word for word, almost word for word, from the 1689 English Bill of Rights. And it's really interesting to me that the Eighth Amendment, sometimes we talk about it like it stops the government from doing these things. The government wasn't doing those things at the time. It was already part of the common law system. This is now that we don't have England, right? We left England, so we don't have the 1689 English Bill of Rights anymore. So I think the founding father, I think James Madison was like, hey guys, we're just going to put this in one line. One line, we're good.
All right.
Now we move on to the Ninth Amendment. The Ninth Amendment's so cool because a lot of historians, and I mean a lot of historians, say that there was no legal precedent for this ever in human history. The idea was in the Ninth Amendment.
What is the Ninth? I don't even remember what the Ninth one is.
Oh, nobody remembers the last two amendments. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. This really follows John Locke's natural right philosophy, that you have all your rights. There was a concern by anti-federalists that the Constitution could be interpreted that if it didn't give you that right, if the Constitution didn't say that right exists, therefore you don't have that right. And Madison was like, that's a good point. Let's have the Ninth Amendment in there. Let's make sure that we're gonna explicitly say that just because the Constitution doesn't talk about this right, that doesn't mean you don't have it. In fact, they went to the extreme in the other direction. They're like, you have every right that exists, but for what's traded off in this Constitution. I think that's awesome.
I love that. Yeah.
And there's no precedent for it. Like, we talked about the Magna Carta. We talked about the English Bill of Rights, 1689. We talked about the Declaration of Rights in Virginia. We talked about the Massachusetts Constitution. We talked about all these other examples. But the Ninth Amendment stands on its own as this incredibly unique piece of legislation that guaranteed rights, not because the Constitution says you have those rights. It goes beyond that. You naturally, as a human being, have those rights. And just because the Constitution doesn't give or take them from you doesn't mean you don't have them.
Yeah. I do like that, man. That's pretty neat. You're saying this was the first of its case. Has this ever been repeated? Have you seen this wording show up in anyone else's constitutions?
The long answer is it's complicated. But the real answer is you do see a wave of constitutions adopted after this that are just very heavily modeled on the U.S. Constitution. And so you see this natural absorption of these types of principles of natural law. And it is kind of cool if you think about it, like all the books John Locke wrote, Two Treats on Government, you know, all that stuff. What really actually embedded his ideas of natural rights was really the U.S. Constitution just being the oldest one around that people keep copying and pasting. Like, and you inadvertently spread this very classically liberal view that of rights. And I think that's kind of cool. Like, it's like, it's not all the books I wrote. It's a bunch of dudes and Philadelphia, New York, and Massachusetts that got together and made this document.
When did John Locke pass?
Late
1704. Okay. I was just wondering how close he was to seeing his ideas get birthed like that. All right. We got one more left. Oh, two more, actually. We got one more real one and then one more almost one.
Yes, and to close out the Ninth Amendment, I'm going to quote from the Constitution Center on how they say the Founding Fathers viewed this. Mm. He said that the Ninth Amendment was specifically included to prevent any perverse interpretation that might one day claim that because a right isn't enumerated, the people don't have it. And Constitution Center, you are an excellent resource, by the way.
Yeah.
You're just good. You guys are all good. Everything you do is great. I have no comments.
No complaints.
Just big fans. So the most important amendment for our economy, and like I'm just saying, you know, our economy, the largest in the world, is the 10th Amendment. So the 10th Amendment is the power is not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people. You always get that orator of the people. Your state doesn't weigh in on it, your states can't somehow say you don't have a right. All your rights are enumerated at birth.
Right.
This allows commerce between the states, but it makes cool things. Your driver license works in Massachusetts and works in Indiana and in Illinois and in Ohio and Pennsylvania and in New York. And what's really interesting is that the Supreme Court has really upheld the implications of Article 10. So back before gay marriage was legalized, it was possible for somebody to get married in a state that allowed gay marriage and then go to another state that doesn't allow it, but still get a divorce.
Hmm. Oh, huh. That's bizarre.
That's really interesting, right?
Right,
that
yeah.
I remember specifically in college, we had a class on this, and one of the things the professor was talking about is that kind of like that idea to accept other states' laws on face value, regardless of weighing an opinion on that law,
right,
is why like we can just like trade freely between states, and we became this economic powerhouse. If all the states split up, they would make up 26 of the 50th largest economies. And
wild.
That's stuff like this.
Wasn't it something like seven of the top 10 would be states or something like that? Or four through one, two, three, four, and five would be like U.S. states.
Yeah, I mean, California should have a seat at the G7.
Yeah.
Like, they should have their own spot. Also, other random favorite American facts. If Alaska was split in two evenly, Texas would become the third largest state, from the second largest state.
That's a great fact.
Alaska's scary.
Wait, is Alaska still that big, even if you don't look at it for Mercator projection?
Yeah, no, it's just drawn?
It's just enormous. That massive always?
Yeah, it's just absolutely enormous. But this idea, this really codified, and there's a good conclusion when we talk about the Bill of Rights, like those first 10 amendments, is that if we talk about the Constitution establishing a federal system of government, and a federal system of government that specifically is designed to empower states and the people, but still maintain that national unity, especially when it comes to commerce and to national defense, it is the 10th Amendment that decentralized the U.S. and effectively established that federal system that, listen, they said the Constitution doesn't have to solve all the problems. It is the framework in which we act. States are allowed to have their own framework, but, and this is important, but the Constitution remains the supreme law of the land. We will govern how states interact, but we are still going to allow the states to do what, to customize themselves in manners that behooves their states to behave the best. And that leads to economic specialization. It leads to more efficiencies. No, and then also knowing that you can just drive across the state and you don't have to worry about, is your contract valid?
Right.
No, you know it's valid. And because I crossed the state line and I need to sue somebody, well, good. I have the Seventh Amendment. We're going to have a jury. That's why you include in a contract, shall be adjudicated, and you name what state it's going to be adjudicated in. The Constitution is beautiful. The Bill of Rights is beautiful. It's such an intelligent document. It somehow answers like tons of questions and answers some of these moral dilemmas that governments have had since a bunch of cavemen got together and decided to govern themselves. It answers these questions, solves all these problems, and somehow survives 250 years later to support the strongest military on Earth in the largest economy on Earth. Like, this is a brilliant document.
Dude, this is basically like 10 sentences we just read out that basically solves all of these problems. That's insanity.
Yeah. And then but then you look at how Article 3 and how future amendments, especially judicial review, will come about.
Yeah.
And what happens? They develop a system to check themselves. They develop a system to say, we know the Constitution isn't perfect, so we're going to put a system in place that's going to fix these so you don't have to throw everything away and restart. I'm like, France is on its fifth constitution. They're on their fifth republic.
Yeah.
Like, it's all, like, the U.S. has been cruising along on something that was written before we knew dinosaurs were around. Like, that's amazing. Now, Kyle, right. can I talk to you about the youngest bill of the Bill of Rights?
Yes, I was going to say, you promised us one bonus one, too.
Yes. So, the bill, as I said before, the Bill of Rights originally was 12 amendments. One of them, the Congressional Appropriation Amendment, which had to do with, as we talked about last episode, about how many, what's the minimum amount of people could be in the House of Representatives. That never passed. It can still pass. If you guys all want to get together, yep, we'll try and get it passed.
This is what we're about to talk about now is what happens if you do get together and do that, right?
Yes, and you get to see on a paper.
what?
This is a good story. This is okay, good. I'm excited. Kyle, I'm excited. I'm sorry, my friend. I'm very excited. So the youngest Bill of Rights was passed almost exactly 200 years after all the other Bill of Rights were passed in 1791.
That's wild.
So there's something called the Congressional Compensation Amendment. I'm going to read it to you. This is the original text that was introduced to states in 1789. No law varying the compensation for the services of the senators and representatives shall take effect until an election of representatives shall have intervened. What a weird word to use, intervened.
Yeah, what does that mean?
What they're basically saying is that if Congress votes to give itself a raise, the raises don't go into effect.
They have to make it through another election cycle.
Yeah. But the way it's worded is kind of cool.
Okay.
The senators who serve for 6 years can get a raise. It won't go in effect till the reps come back through. But they're still in there.
Oh, that's tricky. Yeah. That sounds like a little loophole they allowed to pass through. Sounds like what we need to be writing up is close that one up.
Yeah. Well, what I do like, though, is I think their logic is the House has to vote on it. So at least the people in the House will take the loss. So there's in 1982, there's this 19-year-old Gregory Watson. He got a C on a history paper that he was arguing because he went and did some research. He had to write a paper about how the Constitution worked. Yeah. And he discovered that this amendment, this would have been the Second Amendment of all the original Bill of Rights passed. This would have been the Second Amendment.
That's a weird one to be number two.
Yeah, right. It's kind of funny though. I kind of like it. Like, I kind of like, hey, before we do everything else,
freedom of the press. But let's take care of the money thing here.
Okay. Well, the freedom of the press probably would have been the Third Amendment. The first one would be the reappropriation one, which is very funny. The first thing is how many of these you have and how do we pay them?
That just shows you like what really was at the forefront of like who. Yeah, yeah, that's funny.
It's kind of, I know, I find it interesting. Like, it's 1982. He's 19 years old. He turns in this paper arguing that, that this amendment can still be ratified. And he hands it to the TA, and the TA is like, gives him a C. He then takes it to his professor, Dr. Waite, and she reviews and goes, this isn't impressive at all. This is just a normal paper. C stands. He's like angry. So he starts writing like every rep. This is university. He was at the University of Texas, Austin. He starts writing every rep across the country, every governor, anybody who will listen to him. This is still ratified. We should ratify this because
I want an A.
Yeah. Because people shouldn't be able to get raises until they should follow this. And he goes, eventually it was a rep for Maine, a legislative delegation for Maine, calls him back and is like, hey, this is interesting. Is this real? And he goes, I think it's real. This is once an amendment gets sent to the states, it exists forever.
Right.
Until they voted down to ratify it. There was never any vote on it. But he was really doing this, A, because he believed in it. There is a good joke, he wanted the A, but he believed in it.
Yeah.
And he wanted to prove that he was correct. Well, at the time, 9 states had already ratified it. So he needed 29 more states, which is wicked funny.
That's because wild.
That's more states than existed than when they offered this to the states to ratify.
Yeah.
So there was 13 states when they did this. At this time, there's 50.
Right.
But he needed 29 more states. It's like, that's how cool the Constitution is. In process, it can adapt itself to the times.
Huh.
Wild. So he campaigns for an entire decade on this. And on May 5th, 1992, this became the 27th Amendment. 200 plus years after it was introduced. 201 years after the Bill of Rights was codified. The last amendment of the Bill of Rights makes into the Constitution over a dozen further from the last one.
1992, so this is 10 years after his paper is turned in. Did he get his A? Tell me he got his A.
And that's what I wanted to know. In 2007, Dr. Waite, she was in her 70s, she signed an official letter changing his grade to an A.
That's amazing. I hope he sent that back to the college and made them actually update his entire transcript.
But there you go. There's the Bill of Rights. The 11 amendments.
Yeah, who would have thought, huh? Who'd have thought that the Bill of Rights didn't get finished until 1992? And it wasn't like women's suffrage or, you know, like the 19th or one of those amendments, too. This is senators' pay rates and when those take effect.
I don't know. It's a good story. The more you read the Constitution, the more you love the Constitution.
What's funny is that the trivia questions you suggested is what should be like, how is that not a trivia question?
That's a good trivia question.
Which Bill of Rights was actually a college project, right?
Funny, a high school student, a college student. Why we have Old Glory, high school students project. Why we have the Bill of Rights. Or why we have, now we've passed all the, or almost all the amendments from the Bill of Rights.
Okay. College.
The Thank you, guy school. Who, the Old Glory only got a B. And really? The guy who got the 27th Amendment, he only got a C, so don't listen to your college professors.
Who drew the snake flag?
It's weird because I've given out Cs, so I wonder how many amendments are going to get passed because I've given some college kid a C. That's sad.
Whoever drew the snake flag, he probably should have gotten at least a D.
Well, Ben Franklin had the original one.
Yeah, that was such a terrible drawing of a snake.
But like, dude, think how scary that would be if you're like a redcoat marching through the woods and you just see all those pamphlets nailed to trees.
It was just like a weird-looking snake.
Join or die with
don't tread on me.
New England, it's just the head, but like,
right.
No, it's like just NE. It's like, come on, dude.
Yeah, that would be pretty terrifying, actually.
That would be terrifying. Dude, you're not in a city. You're in the middle of the woods. This isn't a developed area yet. You're like, oh my God, are you going to, I'm in.
All right. Well, I think we did make it through all 11, actually. I have to reamend the statement for the closing outro from last week.
You have to reamend.
I didn't mean to make that joke.
Kyle beats me. He's like, you're not allowed to talk anymore.
All right. Well, I think that means that there's nothing left to do now but to start preparing for our inevitable deep dive into Jackson's legacy. which will have to start next week, unfortunately. In the meantime, though, you can cheer us up by leaving a comment or a rating or review on your platform of choice, or just tell your friends about us. Send us a note of encouragement telling us how much you loved our expose on the Bill of Rights and maybe what grade you think that you would have gotten.
What's your favorite amendment? What amendments do you want to see added?
Oh, what amendment would you add? Yeah, if you were there, if you had the ear of John Madison, what would you have written in? And the wildest one. I want to hear the wildest one.
What? Get crazy in here.
Yeah. Shoot us an email at buckstartsherepodcast@gmail.com. Also visit the website, buckstartsherepodcast.com. We'll be back soon, but until then, I don't know. What's the sign-off word here?
Till then, read the Constitution.
Okay, there you go.
Very angry?
Now.